This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
It's Mary Chifo, Laurel on Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am not Amy Nelson, nor am I Patrick Devlin, so don't adjust your devices. We are your new co-hosts. I am Liam Smart, and joining me today is Brandy Jackala and Nick Collinson. How are you guys?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Brandy?
Same here.
Yeah.
I'm awesome, too.
Nice. How are you doing, Liam? How's the head? I heard that you were doing a bit of a wine tour yesterday.
Yeah, no. So, I did a wine tour in the McLaren Vale region. Started drinking at 9:30. And that's AM. Didn't finish drinking until about 4:30 PM. So it was an experience. Anyone who's in South Australia or comes to South Australia has to go to McLaren Vale in the Barossa Valley. They're beautiful places with beautiful wines.
I absolutely agree. Not trying to push any Australian stereotypes straight out the gate here, but yes, agree. Definitely, if you go to South Australia, check out those places. And in the same vein, if you come to where I am in Victoria, you got to check out the Yarra Valley.
Mm-hmm. We're a nation of alcoholics.
Yeah, I can't say anything about drinking here. We have to get our hard liquor at a state-licensed liquor store, so.
It's basically the same here.
No, we'll just go to the nearest winery and pick it up.
Rub it in.
And Nick, what have you been up to this week? You went on a bug conference, didn't you?
I did. So, I just got back on Wednesday night, actually. And yeah, last week I was up at the 50th annual Australian Entomological Society conference and AGM. So, it was wonderful. I got to go up there, obviously, as I am a PhD student. So, I was up there as a student presenting some of my work that will form one of the chapters of my thesis. So, I got to present a talk, and I saw a whole lot of others from a range of different subjects. So, there was everything from kind of pest management to, on the other end of the scale, conservation of endangered insects, a lot of stuff about bees and other pollinators, because, of course, it's not just bees who pollinate all of our wonderful flowers and crops. It was wonderful. It was fascinating, and I got to meet a lot of great people up there as well, make a lot of connections and do all the networking you're supposed to do as well. So, a very productive week.
Yeah. Awesome. What have you been up to, Brandy? Working?
Well, I wish you had just asked me first, because then it wouldn't be such a letdown.
No.
You were really drunk at a bug conference.
No. I don't ever get really drunk, because I don't like the after effects of being that drunk.
Neither did I this morning.
But yeah, I can't even tell you the last time I had a hangover. So that's not my jam. I did get in a car accident on Thursday. So that was fun.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. The person who hit me from behind is also fine. Her car is not, and my car does have slight damage. I've had it for about 5 weeks, and I got rear-ended.
That car's cursed. Get rid
and,
of it.
No, if there was a car to get in an accident with, it's a Nissan Rogue, because that thing is a tank. And there was so little damage to the car that you have to really look to actually see the damage.
Wow.
And she hit me pretty hard. I mean, it was one of those situations where somebody came to a very abrupt stop in front of me. And so I came to an abrupt stop as well and managed to not hit that person. but the person behind me was not able to do the same. And I feel bad for her because I know the feeling. I've been in a situation like that. And so, but it did kind of wreck the rest of my day. But that's okay because I'm fine and the car will get fixed and my insurance company is taking care of everything. Yeah. So I can just sit around and wait for them to need something from me.
That's brilliant. A similar thing happened to me not that long ago as well. Someone in a very fancy Lexus banged into the back of my rather tough and rugged Subaru. And because they banged into the back of me, their insurance covered it all.
Yeah, because I think it's kind of like a worldwide thing that... as far as traffic law, if you rear end somebody, it's automatically your fault.
Got to maintain that proper stopping distance.
Absolutely.
Anyway, wine tours, bug conferences, and traffic accidents aren't all we're here to talk about today.
Are they not?
So,
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong podcast.
Yeah, me too.
Apparently. So
I thought we were just having a chat.
We are here to talk about, well, I guess as it's our first podcast, just the three of us together, I would say we're here to talk about our thoughts about what we've seen so far of Discovery and what we're expecting to see in season three.
So, I thought we'd do a little introduction to ourselves. Brandy, you had a fun little idea. Instead of telling us our Star Trek stories, because we've all been on The Edge and Life from the Edge and an episode of To the Journey and an episode of Earl Grey, you've all heard us before talking about our Trek story. So, Brandy, how did you get into podcasting?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story.
It starts
over a decade ago when it all goes back to Doctor Who, and I will explain why. I enjoy Doctor Who. I was listening to a podcast called The WhoCast. They suddenly got this new host. I really liked this new host. This new host said, "If you'd like to see me freak out before a podcast, follow me on Twitter." Started following him on Twitter. Started chatting with him. Started chatting with his partner. Started chatting with all of these people that they were friends with. They started a podcast. This was 2009 that they started this podcast, and they had seen the Star Trek 2009 movie, and they wanted to know how I felt about it, and we sent in extensive feedback about that. And they were just like, "Wow, you guys seem to have a lot to say. How about you do your own podcast?" So we thought, huh, maybe we should. And so we came up with an idea, and my husband said, "Well, what do we want to talk about?" And I said, "Let's not limit ourselves. Let's just talk about anything we want, because then the world is our oyster, so to speak." And we are gothy people, and so we kind of filter everything through our darker view of life and love and happiness. And we just talk about the things that we want to talk about. And back then it was called the Inside Outcast, and we had a home on Geek Planet Online for a while. That website sadly no longer exists, and so we moved over to be a wing of the Strange and Deadly Network with our friend Tom, whom we met through podcasting. Oh, it's been 10 years since I've met Tom. Wow. That's amazing. Most of these people are in England. That's the funniest part. It was because of international friends that I ended up becoming a podcaster. So here I am today.
What about you, Nick?
Oh, well, I mean, honestly, the first proper podcast that I've been on that went to air was that first episode of The Edge that I was on, where we were talking about alien biology in Discovery. Previous to that, I was in a very short-lived, I want to say, like, online sketch comedy video-ish group with some friends of mine, which we called ourselves as a group Grilled Mouse Productions, and the show that we were putting on was called The Weird Half Hour. Weird spelled W-H-E-I-R-D, or I-E-R-D. There are honestly a couple of videos of that up still on YouTube that mostly involve me very aggressively cooking and shouting at a camera, and it was called, that particular show was called Stuff Your Hole. So through that group,
yes,
me and especially my buddy Alex, who started it, were both really into music. And he wanted to do a radio show style thing called Succinct Six Songs, where you basically just, a couple of us or like two or three of us would hang out together and would come in with a list of six songs to a theme that we wanted to talk about. And the problem was we really wanted to play all of the songs and do it a lot more like a radio broadcast, which is why it never actually came to fruition, because there was no way to get the rights to do anything like that. I now know someone who does a similar thing on a Twitch stream on her own channel. Her name is Kathleen Devere, and the show, like the thing is just called Brave New Faves. And that's the thing, is like, it's just a Twitch stream and she doesn't record it or keep the VODs or anything. So it's just like, it's live, it's on, you listen and watch, and then it's done. So, you know, if I ever wanted to revisit that, I could maybe use that sort of format. But yeah, I've been listening to podcasts since the mid-2000s. I think the first one I ever listened to was a Firefly fan podcast called The Signal, which lasted up.
Start the signal.
It lasted up until very, you know, relatively recently. Like, I kind of came in back into it, the same host all the way through. And that was good fun. So I think I've had a long history of listening to like geeky fan podcasts of different things.
Cool.
That leaves you, Liam.
It does. Except mine, I feel like I was a little bit of a late bloomer listening to podcasts. I didn't really start until just before Discovery aired. I thought, oh, I kind of bored driving to work. I want something to listen to that's not music and the god-awful radio stations that we have to listen to here. Oh, they're terrible. So I thought I'd look for a Star Trek Voyager podcast, because Voyager, unashamedly, is my favorite Star Trek. And I found To the Journey. From there, I found the Babel Conference and then started listening to a lot of Trek FM shows. I also listened to another podcast called My Dad Wrote a Porno.
I love that one.
Is an amazing podcast. Brandy's got her hands in the air.
I love it so much.
As well.
It's the best. It's the
best. Oh, yes. I mean, not wanting to plug another network, but once you're done listening to everything on Trek.fm, go and listen to that, because it's so funny.
It is great.
It is so
amazing. Just be careful when you're driving. Back to traffic accidents. I've almost had two accidents whilst listening to that show because I'm uncontrollably laughing.
Yes.
So, yeah, after that, through season one, when Amy was doing podcasts, I had a bit of a joke on one of the threads, and then she read it out on the show, and I thought, oh, no, I was really worried that she took it the wrong way. So I ended up messaging Amy privately talking about season one. Not long after that, I started talking to Chris Littlefield after one of Brandy's live shows, and then I was telling Chris that I was too scared to talk to Brandy. I'm just like, I really want to talk to Brandy, but I'm too scared.
Why?
I don't know now.
I'm not frightening.
You're not frightening, no. I just don't know why. So then, yeah, Amy then asked me if I wanted to go on an episode of The Edge, which was about what-ifs and time crystals, which is a very strange concept of a show. It was quite hard to think of some captain scenarios for that episode. Then Chris wondered if I wanted to go on to an episode of Postcards for the most recent Trouble with Edward. So I did that.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Went on an episode of To the Journey. And yeah, now I'm here. Amy's like, do you want to take over The Edge? I was like, sure. Nick and Brandy have to do it with me.
Nice. Yep.
We got grandfathered in. Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means that we were already in because of our association with you. Basically, it's like if you had a mobile phone plan and they decided to change all of the plans and do away with it, you would still be able to keep that old plan.
Okay.
They couldn't force you into a new plan. But if you ever did make any changes to your account, they would have to say, okay, well, now you have to get one of these plans. But it's called being grandfathered in. Because I don't know where that phrase comes from. I just know that's the phrase that they use.
Okay.
So,
I'm just going to see you as my grandfather now.
Okay, great. I'm down with that.
Granddaddy Brandy.
I'm yeah. Yeah. I like it, actually. It makes me feel powerful.
Oh, God, can you imagine if I put that as the episode title? Granddaddy Brandy.
Grandfather Brandy.
Everybody would be like, what?
So, I briefly wanted to discuss season one and season two with you guys. So, why don't we start with you, Brandy? What did you think of season one as a whole?
I loved it. It was the first new Trek we'd had in many years. Everybody knows that. And I settled into loving it very, very quickly. I was immediately enamored of Michael and Tilly. And Saru and everybody. I just thought that they were really working well together as a cast, and I was interested to see where the story was going. And I did actually, on live, did say, I think Ash's Voke before, you know, anyone else did. But there were many people out there who felt the same way, who were saying that in other places, too. So it's not like I was the first person ever. But I did catch on to that pretty quickly. And it was just something. It was Trek, but it was different, and it was new, and it was exciting, and it was unpredictable in a lot of ways. And I loved that feeling of adventure. Like, where are we going with this? I can't wait to see. And so, yeah, really enjoyed that. Wasn't surprised that they went to the Mirror Universe, and actually really enjoyed that aspect of it. Some people did not. I did. I especially loved Captain Killy. That was probably my most favorite thing, was watching Tilly be Captain Killy. And that was very good. Yeah, that just cemented my passion for Tilly right then and there.
Yeah. So don't you think, though, I think the Mirror Universe was spoiled by Jonathan Frakes, though.
He mentioned that
they
were going
Frakes.
There. Yeah. Otherwise, I think I would have been genuinely surprised to see them go there.
I would have been, yeah.
No, I get that. It was when they were doing all of those jumps, and then there was that part where Lorca changes one of the destinations, and I thought, but you can't really tell that's what he did. And I thought, he did something. I know he did something, and that's not right. And when they ended up in this place where there was just detritus floating in the air, and it was, you know, the remains of a Klingon ship, I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
They're in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah. I recently met Jason Isaacs at Supernova Adelaide. Such a lovely man. I asked him in the 30 seconds that I was allowed whether he knew he was Mirror all along. And he said only him and Sonequa knew that they were Mirror. None of the other cast knew.
Wow. Smart.
That's so cool.
So upon reading the script, apparently everyone was really surprised when Lorca turned out to be Mirror. He also said that he originally wasn't going to be taking the role of Lorca.
Oh.
Yeah, he said that he didn't want to be part of Star Trek because he didn't want to be part of potentially, in his words, ruining it a little bit more, in terms of he thought Enterprise brought it down and he didn't want to be part of a series that could have not taken off and made the Star Trek franchise a little bit more, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't want to make it worse than it already felt in some fans' minds.
Damn. It's a shame that that was...
Yeah, those fans suck.
Yeah. It's a shame that that was something that an actor would have been thinking of for getting into a show, I guess. I hope that with the sort of success of Discovery and with Picard coming out now, that, you know, that sort of mentality would not be as present now.
He changed his mind as soon as he read the script.
That's awesome. That's really good.
And, yeah, I was quite shocked that he said that to me, again, in the 30 seconds I was allowed.
Wow, yeah.
Well, it was more than 30 seconds, but... Hmm. And I'm probably not sure whether he would want that repeated, but it is now, so...
He wouldn't say anything to a person in public if he didn't want it repeated. We so he's not that kind of guy. He's all good.
I very much liked the sort of the darker side of Star Trek, because season one was very dark and I guess people call it gritty as well. And whilst a lot of Star Trek is very optimistic, it was, except for maybe Deep Space Nine, it was very good to just have a dark story that's reminiscent of what most TV shows are like now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got... Yeah, sorry. I like that aspect of it too. And I've actually got quite a couple of things that I wanted to mention about that. Because if I were to pick a favorite of what we've seen so far of season one and season two, it would probably be season one. And I think that's the main reason why, is because I actually think that season one, especially the way that they finished it and wrapped it up, it really did embody what I like most about Star Trek, which is the idea of these kind of very optimistic utopian sort of what we see as like Starfleet or Federation principles triumphing over adversity and also triumphing over the sort of the push to set those principles aside in order to, you know, win a war or for survival, which is like, I think what Deep Space Nine shows really well as well. But I think that particular aspect of it was portrayed very, very well towards the end of season one of Discovery, where, you know, first you've got them just being completely decimated by the Klingons. Like, the Klingons are winning that war, and Starfleet is basically having to do sort of more and more sort of very, like, not the sort of things we would normally associate with them in order to try to survive. And we even see that in the very first episode. It is portrayed in a way that makes it look like if Michael had succeeded in her mutiny and had sort of betrayed Federation principle, so to say, that may have averted the war. And then with the jump to the Mirror Universe, like, I actually think that that fits in really well with the whole arc of the season. I've heard a lot of people say that it felt like it just sort of went off on a completely different tangent. I think by going over there and by seeing the Terran Empire, they basically see what they could become if they set aside all of those principles in order to win the war, to defeat the Klingons. And it, the whole sort of overall theme is very much like, how much are we willing to sacrifice in order to, like, in order to survive? And then I just thought the way that they actually finished it was, I mean, maybe the only criticism I could have of, like, the final episode was it felt a little bit rushed. But yeah, it's just the whole sort of wrap up of that. And Laurel is such a fantastic character. Season two, I think the things that got better were kind of, I say the acting, not to say that it was at all bad in the first season. It's always been great, but I think it was even better in season two. And the sort of the overall writing and production values were maybe a little bit better in season two, but the sort of overarching plot and theme wasn't quite as, what's the word, sort of quite as well defined to me.
In season two.
In season two, yeah. Season two, I found it a little bit hard to follow exactly what was supposed to be the main idea of the season, I guess. And maybe it wasn't meant to be that much. Like, it sort of started very much with, you know, just trying to find Spock, trying to find out what the Red Angel is. And then it was, in that one, it felt like it actually was a bit of a kind of veering off to the side where suddenly it's like, oh, it's the evil AI that is controlling Section 31. And how do we stop it from destroying all of humanity? I was slightly less of a fan of that. But, I mean, I still loved basically all of it.
See, I was originally one of those people that thought, hang on a minute, we started off with a Klingon war in season one, then we hit a brick wall, and all of a sudden we are now going into the Mirror Universe. I never thought until just then, Nick, about them seeing themselves in the Terran Empire and losing their principles and how they would have to defeat the Klingons using principles that aren't of the Mirror Universe. I've never thought of it like that. It's funny you also say that season one is your favorite. I would say season two is mine.
I think more people would say that.
I wouldn't say anything about it being about the themes. I just found the story a little bit more compelling because it's more of a mystery aspect until Michael Burnham was revealed to be the Red Angel. I think we already know my opinion on that one from last episode. I'm not a fan of Michael Burnham being the Red Angel. I thought it would have been better if it was someone else. But, hey, it was still a good show. I ain't going to say anything otherwise, but Brandy, what did you think about season one and two? I mean, two. Hang on a minute. I already asked you about number one, didn't I? Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to take me a while to get used to hosting stuff, isn't it?
It's okay. It's okay. It's all good. I loved season two. I loved season two. I loved a good mystery. I'm usually very good at figuring out mysteries, so I love it when I'm stumped. And they totally faked me out by making the Red Angel more than one person.
Yes.
And that was smart. Yeah. That was smart. I'm like, yes, okay. You actually surprised me. And I love it when I get surprised by a mystery because most of the time I can figure it out.
But wouldn't it have been better if it remained the mother, though, don't you think? Or not?
No, I do not. I do not think that at all. Because that's the thing. You can't have the mother just suddenly the mother's alive and she's the hero of everything. That's not going to help our story.
Yeah.
And so I understand why they did what they did, because without finding out about the mother being the Red Angel, Discovery would not have been able to get to the future. So unfortunately, they needed that MacGuffin to make the Red Angel suit recreatable. But because it's programmed to a specific kind of DNA, Mom's gone, so who else is going to do it?
Oh, yeah. Good point. It's not going to be a shapeshifter.
So.
Odo comes
well,
flying in.
Well, I think even when you're a shapeshifter, does that change your actual DNA structure?
Let's ask the biologist.
I think you're...
Don't ask me.
So I don't know. Anyway, in any case, I really enjoyed season two. I enjoyed them going back to things that had been mentioned in season one, like the death of Michael's parents, and that there's more to that story, and finding out what there is to that story. And there are a lot of people I know who were disappointed that they didn't see the Klingon War in season one. I didn't want to see that. Mm. I didn't want to see a whole season of a war.
Yeah.
I've already been through that with Enterprise, and it was hard. It was really hard. And there's already so much in this world that is so hard on a daily basis that I don't necessarily want that in all of my entertainment. I like my entertainment to be an escape. I mean, yeah, it's fine if it mirrors what's going on in real life, but I also don't want to watch another war. I was glad that we skipped to the end of that. I know I may be in the minority on that, but I was glad to have skipped to the end. But with season two, there were just so many wonderful things.
I wasn't even aware that there was sort of a backlash of people wanting to see the rest of the war. I thought people wanted Star Trek to be more about peaceful exploration and were upset that there was a war in there to begin with. So I guess you can't please anyone.
No, and that's the thing. You're never going to please everyone. And if you try, then you will fail because there's no way to do that. Except just keep bringing new Trek. And that's what we've gotten. And it's paved the road to so many other things. Yeah. But yeah, I'm so grateful for season two because I was already an Anson Mount fan, and it wasn't because of Hell on Wheels. I didn't even start watching Hell on Wheels until after season two of Discovery had ended. So yeah. I was already a fan of his, and I was like, oh, perfect, perfect, perfect. And then Ethan Peck is Spock. We all know how I feel about that. I'm not going to rehash it right now. So just wonderful things that I never expected and never knew I needed until I had them. And now they're gone and I want more. Yeah. So please get that Pike series already. Please. I need it.
It's just, I want.
I need it.
See, I feel like I want something to continue in that time period. Cause I feel like they left a few threads dangling. Like,
oh, there are threads.
Who are the Logic Extremists?
There are threads.
I want to know more about them.
Yeah. Yeah. I know about them a bit from Enterprise. They're not fun people. But yeah, I want to know more. There's definitely things to know more. I want to know more about Laurel. I want to know what goes on with the Klingon Empire. I want to know all of these things. So yeah, bring us that freaking... And I don't want to know that through a Section 31 filter. I want to know that through a Captain Pike filter, please.
I think if everything has been left behind, I want to see more of Rebecca Romijn's number one.
Yes.
And Laurel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that last scene with her in season two with Laurel, as she's on the Cleave ship, loved it. That bit almost brings me to tears. That bit, and when Serana comes back with the ships of the Barrel ships.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I was just crying through the whole thing.
Randy, you were crying through the whole season.
I was crying through the whole season. There was something in every single episode that made me well up at one point. I don't mean just well up. I mean, I full on cried. Like, the tears were falling from my eyes and down my face. And there were tissues required.
Didn't I message you once saying, have you flooded all of Utah yet?
Yes. That would be impossible. There's a lot of desert here. So. I'd have to really work to flood the whole state.
I was wanting to ask both of you. And very quickly, what did you think of the Klingon redesign?
Oh, so when I very first saw it with, like, you know, not like studio lighting or anything like that, I think the first leaked picture was just a bunch of guys in makeup sitting around a lunch table. Yeah, I thought it looked really weird. I was like, what? How are those Klingons? But as soon as we actually saw them in the show and had T'Kuvma giving that wonderful speech in Klingon, I was... hooked instantly, and I will put on record that I'm not ashamed to say at all that the Discovery Klingons are absolutely my favorite incarnation of the Klingons. They have made me take the idea of the Klingons seriously. Like, season one of Discovery made two things in Star Trek that I had previously found kind of a bit silly and not enjoyed that made me really invested in them, and that's the Klingons and the Mirror Universe. Mirror Universe episodes, especially in Deep Space Nine, I would skip. And, like, Klingon-centric episodes in, like, TNG, I wouldn't skip, but I tended to not enjoy them as much because I found them a little bit one-dimensional. It was very much like, honor! There are a few bits, like, Worf is a good character, and he's, you know, he does have, like, growth. But just as soon as they started showing, you know, the different houses and these different characters, and there's more than just, like, kind of the warrior class. You know, they're maintaining their culture and their identity, and there's all of these different sort of warring factions and Laurel. Like, I think I have to put out for, like, the character of Laurel herself, and Mary Chifo's acting is just, like, brilliant. And it is definitely her that is what kept my partner watching with me for the entire two seasons as well, who has never watched any kind of Star Trek or any kind of sci-fi before. And we were both just, like, on the edge of our seats just anytime Laurel was on screen. I love the Discovery Klingons.
That's good. Brandy?
Yeah, I'm a fan. When I first saw the quote-unquote new Klingons, I thought, oh, okay. So they don't have hair. Okay. Mm. That was pretty much my reaction. And then there was all of this hullabaloo, because there's always going to be hullabaloo about any changes. And I'm just like, it's fine, guys. It's fine. But getting to see them in action in a totally different way than any other series or movie has done a world of good for that race.
Yeah.
And I appreciate them even more than I did. And I feel like their culture has been given this deeper, richer undercurrent that it didn't have before. And I think that, you know, Mary Chifo as Laurel was absolutely inspired, amazing, wonderful, perfect in every way. And I want more of her. And I don't really have anything negative to say about the Klingons at all. If anything, I'm just overjoyed that they got so much attention and that we got to hear so much Klingon.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Entire conversations in Klingon. Yes.
That's what made it more realistic to me. You got an alien race. Listen to their alien language. We can all read subtitles. It's not, well, generalizing, but the subtitles are fine, and it's just good to immerse yourself into another completely alien culture. When I first saw that picture of the redesigned Klingons, I thought, oh, good. You know, it's 2016, 2017. Makeup's caught up to us.
Yeah.
They look great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had no issue with the slightly different looking Andorians and the Tellarites. I thought the Tellarites looked awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Just a quick second of silence for DC Fontana, who passed away a few days ago, who was the creator of the Andorians and the Tellarites.
Yeah.
May she rest in peace and be forever hailed as the goddess she was.
Oh, yeah.
Listeners, we're recording this on December the 8th, even though this is coming out in January.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot about that. So at that time, it's a month from now. That's a month from now. Yeah. That wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Sorry, guys.
No. That's okay. That's fine. Oh dear. Is there anything else you want to say about season one or season two before we move on?
Not for me.
No, Brandy.
I rewatch them both frequently. Yeah. I have not stopped rewatching them. I now have the season two Blu-rays because special features.
Oh, cool.
The special features are fantastic.
Now, moving on to season three. What do you want from season three?
Brandy, do you want to take this one first?
What do I want from season three? I want interesting stories. I want interesting new characters. I want to see these people from nearly a millennium ago bringing Starfleet values back to the galaxy. That's pretty much all I really want. I just want more. I want more. I don't have any expectations. I just expect to enjoy it. That's pretty much my only expectation, because when I have ideas or expectations about what something should be, I don't enjoy what it actually is. And that's on me. So I just stopped having expectations about things so that I could enjoy what I'm being given rather than complaining about what I didn't get because I thought it was going to be something else.
Yeah. I'm really hoping we get to see Sonya Son again.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, she's somewhere in the future.
She is. So
she's in that time area, that timeline. So she's out there. I'm sure that they're going to eventually run into her, because if she got pulled back to New Eden, they're eventually going to find her. Because, you know, they got a spore drive.
See, this is one thing that did bug me. Sorry to go back to season two. They had all those issues going through with the Jarsep, and the Jarsep saying, you're using the mycelial network, you're ruining the network, yet they still then go and do the spore drive.
Yeah.
And they still go jumping.
Yeah. And then at the end, they in that whole thing of, like, just everything that happened to Discovery is classified to you know, stop the information getting out, they included the spore drive in that, and it's like they had a perfect reason that the spore drive was no longer being used in the original series, because it was destroying the
that is one of my probably the biggest criticism I have, is that they sort of dropped the ball on that particular aspect of things.
You know, and this is my feeling about it, because the Jarsep said that it was Discovery that was doing it, and it's because it unleashed a monster. But the monster was Culber, so if they removed him from the mycelial network, is there really still a problem going on?
But May did say that every time the ship jumps through, it destroys part of...
punches a hole.
Yeah. So, I mean, she said it was starting before the monster, quote-unquote monster, came through. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things that I feel like they could have wrapped up, like you said, Nick, a lot better than just...
Maybe that's going to be a part of season three, because they did not, you know, exclude going back into the mycelial network, because Tilly did say to May, you know, we'll find a way. So
they did pinky promise.
I feel like they did have a pinky swear. So, you know, and Tilly doesn't break those pinky swears.
Oh, yeah.
Those are super important.
Yeah. Do you know one thing I really want? And I think I said this before on a round table. I want non-humanoid aliens.
Yes, I agree.
Yes.
Give me something with 47 legs. Like,
ooh, get some Tholians
exactly,
up in there.
Exactly, Tholians. Ever since...
Yeah, when have we seen a Tholian except in Enterprise in the Mirror Universe?
Yeah. We need to see the Tholians. Surely it can't be too expensive now like it used to be in the past to
if it's render yeah that I in mean there. We had the tardigrade, and I think their original plan was for that to actually be a crew member, but it turned out to be too difficult or too expensive to have that sort of on the bridge in every episode, but it was still there, so there's no reason why you couldn't have something like that, something like to the alienness of species 8472 or the Tholians showing up.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have the Tholians in there every week. Like, just a few episodes, like, as they say, 8472 was in Voyager. That would have cost them an arm and a leg, probably, to put that into Voyager. And I think you mentioned this on your postcards episode, Brandy, with Chris, the Aquatics.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Zindi.
I want to see Zindi.
Me too.
I want to see Zindi. Aquatics, Arboreals. I don't really care about the reptilians and the insectoids. No, they're jerks.
I don't care about those.
Maybe they've gotten better. But I would love to see more of the aquatics.
I just want to see something that's not so humanoid. That's why I enjoyed the Ba'ul, even though they were quite sort of humanoid. They were very, you know, non-standard.
And terrifying.
I forget the name of the actor who played the Ba'ul, but he is, I believe... has a condition. He just has he's very tall and has very long limbs. So his profession is basically playing characters like that. Like, I think they brought him in because he's good friends with Doug Jones, because they both do a lot of costume work, and especially in horror films. And I want to say that this was a guy who played something in The Woman in Black. I'm not sure, but I know that he was something else in a recent horror film that had to be sort of very sort of long and skeletal and gangly.
Javier Botet.
Okay.
He was born in Ciudad Real, Spain.
Ah, yes.
He was in The Conjuring 2. He was in Rec. I saw Rec.
Oh, it's The Conjuring 2 that I was thinking of. Spanish.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Rec, you need to see Rec. They made a crap American version of it called Quarantine. Don't see that. See Rec. Yep. Watch it with the subtitles, not the dubbing. It's amazing.
Okay. I haven't seen that, yeah. So I don't know.
It's Rec is fantastic. It actually truly scared me so much in one point, and it wasn't a jump scare, that I pushed the coffee table across the room.
Oh, wow.
It was totally reflexive. I had my foot up, you know, just against the top of the coffee table. And the coffee table is wrought iron and stone. Like, there's stone tiles in the top of it. So it is not light. But this thing scared me so – this moment scared me so bad that my leg just shot out and shoved that coffee table. Dave thought it was pretty funny. Right. And I don't get scared easy.
I can't comment. I don't know. What do you both reckon could be the overall storyline, though, of season 3?
Oh, just God. From the trailers. Go ahead, Nick. You go first.
See,
go first. Because I know what I think.
Well, I think, and I put this a lot in my comment on the latest trailer, which was on the postcards episode for that, is I do think a lot of it will evolve around, like, what happened to the Federation and what happened to Starfleet, and I have no idea how they're going to do it, and there are definitely ways they could do it well. There are ways that they could do it not well, and I am definitely excited but also slightly worried in terms of how they take it. But I think it will mostly evolve around, or what I'm at least hoping for, is an examination of these, like, Federation sort of utopian ideals, and actually looking back at them from, you know, so far in the future to see, like, which ones worked, which ones didn't. Because I think in my comment, the thing that I pointed out was this is a quote, and I cannot remember where I first saw it, but it was the idea that utopia is an exercise in stagnation.
That was postcards. Yeah.
And I think that is something about what we will see. I imagine that it will have shown that the Federation got to a certain point where they thought that their society was perfect, so they stopped trying to improve things, and then slowly things go bad and start to stagnate, and it happens just slowly enough that no one notices. And the creators have said that Star Trek is always going to be sort of reminiscent of the current world. So I think we'll see a lot of that coming into it as well. And I really don't know sort of what forms it could take. And I'm really excited to find out because, yeah, I don't know what the overall sort of overarching story or theme could be.
Because I think with that, we know the Federation was okay in the 31st century from what happened in Enterprise. With Daniels and, you know, the Time Police or whatever they are coming from the 31st century. They're now, Discovery's now there in the 32nd century. So do you reckon that kind of thing could happen within, you know, 100 years? That it could fall apart like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think so.
Mm.
Because complacency is the beginning of stagnation.
Yep.
So being complacent and not working towards a goal anymore, yeah, you can fall apart really, really quickly.
Okay. What do you think, Brandy? What do you reckon could be the overarching storyline?
You know, I think it's going to be more than one. First, it's going to be Michael trying to find Discovery.
Yeah.
To get back to where she was supposed to land, which was New Eden. And it's obvious from the trailer that they do connect again, because there is a scene where you see Tilly hugging Michael. So that is going to happen at some point. But I think that this journey of her looking for Discovery is how she's going to stumble on this whole thing of the Federation isn't what it was. And possibly, you know, most people don't even know about it anymore. And so now she's got a new problem and she wants to find out how this happened, when this happened. And the thing is I don't know how she thinks she's going to fix it if her time crystal is drained and she can't go anywhere. So I don't know how they're going to solve that particular problem. I mean, they probably still have that incubator that Queen Poe made.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it actually can be refilled or if it's just, you know, now burned out beyond repair. I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Exactly. Have you seen everything that's been coming out of, say, Alex Kurtzman, Michelle Paradise, and even in the recent ones with Sonequa Martin-Green, her interviews? They're very focused on talking about canon and them saying that they can depart from canon now because they're so far in the future. What are your thoughts on canon? Nick's smiling.
Boy, do I have. So, it's weird. I have a weird relationship with the idea of canon. I'm not sure if I like the term very much because, like, I love continuity. I really love when you've got a new series like Discovery making callbacks to things from 50 years ago. And, like, the idea that they had with Sarek trying to get Michael into the Science Academy and then they wouldn't admit her. They're basically like, oh, we'll take one of your children. And he chose Spock. And then that is like another layer to like him being disappointed that Spock chose Starfleet instead. I really liked that.
Yeah.
We probably didn't need it, but it adds that extra dimension that I think makes it all fit in really well.
It's the same as we didn't really need to see Pike see himself in that wheelchair beepy thing.
Yeah, but again, that shows that like he makes that choice. He knows his fate. That's the sort of stuff that I love in reference to Star Trek Picard. I recently got the Countdown comic for that, which is brilliant, which apparently they are saying, even though it's a comic and it's not on the TV, at least for now, they're saying that it is technically alpha canon. So whatever that means, they're basically saying that essentially they're saying these events in the comic happened for real and could be referenced in the show, which means that the Odyssey class starship, i.e. the Enterprise F, which was developed for Star Trek Online, is technically now canon, if that's all to be believed. And that's the kind of thing that I do like when someone is like, you know, this thing that was not, that started in like a book or whatever in a, you know, not necessarily canon medium has now been brought in to like the mainline canon. The other side of that, you know, when there's like one slight tiny continuity error or something and someone says, oh no, that breaks canon. That I really dislike because, like I say, continuity is good, but when you actually try to refer to it as canon, which this term comes from the canon of the Bible, basically, it's like this is the, you know, the text that is the word of God. This is the thing that we believe to be like the truth. I think it is damaging to look at just the general fictional media that we consume in that manner, especially something that's been going as long as Star Trek. Like, if they were to go back and, say, have something huge happen, like the destruction of Vulcan in the Kelvin timeline movies, if they were to try and do something like that and say, no, this is still the same timeline, obviously that would be a problem because it's a huge thing and it throws all other things out of whack. But, like, tiny details, like, you know, the uniforms looking a bit different, the ships looking a bit different, and, like, I can put that aside because the story is good and the main ideas of what it's supposed to be about and all of these sort of little things that they're weaving in, that's what I like. And the fact that they weave those things in shows that they do respect the main ideas of what it's supposed to be about. They just also know that they're creating a TV show in 2019 and they can't have everything look and feel exactly as it did in the 1960s. I mean, there's a scene in the original pilot, The Cage, where Pike is surprised to see a woman on the bridge. Like, Anson Mount's Pike would not have a problem with that because that is a character that was portrayed in 2019. So, you know, it's things have to be updated and changed and some little bits of, you know, old continuity have to just be
thrown out.
Yeah, thrown out, essentially.
Yeah, I agree with absolutely everything that you've said there. I don't particularly want to see too many references to previous iterations of Star Trek in season 3 either. Because, and I know Amy also said this on a previous episode of The Edge, you don't reference anything anymore that happened 1,000 years ago. I mean, you can do, and those things that you reference are big events.
Yeah.
So, for example, you'll always be references in the future to World Wars I and II. There'll always be references and learnings, at least in British school, about the Battle of Hastings and things like 9/11, etc. All of those things are massive events. You're not going to get in Discovery, or at least I hope they don't, things like references to Grand Nagus Rom. That's nothing in comparison, do you know? Like,
oh, I can do you one better. Grand Nagus Brunt.
Oh, Brunt. F-C-A.
Jeffrey Combs, I love you.
Can we please have Jeffrey Combs in Discovery?
Yeah.
Oh, I just want Jeffrey Combs in everything. Yeah. He makes everything better.
But like,
love him.
If they reference things like the Dominion War, or the Battle of Wolf 359, or even Voyager being lost, those are big events that everyone would have known about on Earth or across the Federation. They're the kind of things that I hope they reference, but only minor. I don't want all the silly little things being like, oh, Captain Picard was such a great captain. He was a great captain, but, like, it's 1,000 years in the future.
I would like to see them make references, but get them wrong, because there's been 1,000 or, you know, 900 years in between.
Yes!
Yeah. It's like that wonderful, like, second episode of Futurama where they go to the moon and it's, like, a theme park and Fry's like, this isn't what happened. And everyone else is like, yeah, it is. This is what our history teachers tell us. There were whalers on the moon.
Purposely break canon.
Oh, God. Yeah. That would be wonderful.
And then get somebody in there and go, well, actually.
We all know that's going to be Stamets.
Not necessarily. It would probably be Saru.
Oh, actually, yes.
It's either of them.
I love it.
Yeah.
Do you know what as well, though? Because they're so far in the future, I think they can probably get away with changing some of, like, what we know is the stereotypical traits of some of the species that we've got.
Yeah.
The Ferengi don't have to be profit-driven anymore.
That would be really
good. They can be civilized and letting women wear clothes and go out of the house.
A bit too far, make money. Don't you think? Gosh. No,
I think 1,000 years is enough time for them to get to that point.
I'm joking.
Point.
The Ferengi workers have seized the means of production.
But, like, you know, it goes back to your point earlier saying that the Klingons are one-dimensional in the past, and now they're multidimensional. Some of the other species can be. Let's hope the Cardassian that we saw in the trailer is not just, you know, hell-bent on domination or whatever the Cardassians were. And it really will hopefully change up Star Trek. Having said that, you don't want it to change too much, because then people will start getting confused, as in casual fans, between Discovery and Picard or Lower Decks or Section 31. Because if they're set, you know, 2400? Yeah, about 2400. There could be a disconnect between the shows in terms of casual viewers.
That's a good point, yeah. I think there is a certain, like, DNA of Star Trek that it needs to have throughout. And so far, I think they've been really good about that. Interested to see how much of it maintains when they're flung off into the future. Because if you would lose too much of that, then it may as well be another show. But I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, as we are discussing all of these things as lay people, can you imagine the discussions that go on in the writer's room and how careful they have to be taking into account the 53 years of Star Trek continuity? Can you imagine the pressure? I can, and I have deep respect for people who will undertake this. I tip my hat to you. People can say whatever they want, but you know what? They're not in that writer's room. They're not doing this job. So, honestly, I don't have any ground to stand on when it comes to any kind of criticism, because they are doing amazing things.
Yeah.
Especially with this burden of all of this other stuff that they have to keep track of. And that's why they have Kirsten Beyer.
I guess the only other thing I wanted to say is I want more Rhys, Detmer, Awushakin.
Yes.
Those guys.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get
and
that.
And definitely get that. Dr. You know Pollard. She's sassy.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's cool.
We're going to get that, too.
I love her.
Yep.
Do you think she's the chief medical officer?
I think they've specifically said that she isn't.
Okay.
Maybe she will be now.
But she probably is now.
Right, it could be. Yeah.
I kind of wish we had the chance to get that with Arium. Or maybe we will. There have been rumors that apparently a trailer was seen with her name on it at the set. So
I did see that rumor this morning. Yeah. She is one character that I wish we kept.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there would be so much potential with Arium that was just gone by the wayside.
I feel like her story is not finished.
Do we have any final thoughts?
I think I've basically said everything that I need to.
I've said my piece. Give me Pike show. Give me more new Trek. Give me introspective writing so that we can know these characters more and enjoy them in their journey. And just, you know, keep up the whole making Brandy cry every episode. You know, I'm down with that. I'm not ashamed of it. If you can move me emotionally like that every single time you put on an episode, you are doing a damn fine job.
It's been fun talking about Discovery as a whole, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey!
I was going to ask this a little bit later, but while we're talking about the Doctor and Seven, let's talk about Voyager relationships. We'll do a quick thumbs up, thumbs down. Doctor Seven, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Okay, interesting. How about Chakotay, Janeway?
I like the idea, but I also don't...
The coin is on its edge.
Yeah, but I also don't like the idea of the captain and the first officer being in a relationship.
The ready room.
I mean, I said, okay, sooner, back to all those people for 5 or 6 days before. I thought, oh, God, did. Have they come up with another thing? They come up with another thing. I remember when Go Big Red was just the big thing. Okay.
Earl Grey.
They want us to be with them.
You guys are just taking it to the extreme now. Just
I
no.
Joe and I are right.
Kimberly and I are right.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Why are you wanting to podcast and to be on The Edge?
You had no choice.
Yeah, so
you
get that feeling?
Me.
That's your arm.
I love the sound of my own voice.
Back.
So.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app, if there still is one, depending on what version of OS you have on your Mac. Anyway, that'll get you the latest episodes as soon as they drop. And please leave us a star rating and a written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Brandy, where can people find you when you're not crying a flood in Utah through season 3?
You can find me. You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. Brandy's with an I-12 as a number. And you can also find me lurking in the Babel Conference. You will also find me on Live from the Edge with my good friend Bruce Gibson. Next episode will be sometime, depending on when this is going out. So, we drop that the day after each new episode of Discovery airs. Probably at the time this has gone out, we will have finished with the short treks. So, hope you watched us there. And I do a podcast with my wonderful, fantastic, amazing husband of 22 years, Dave, called the Dark Corner Podcast, where we look at geek culture and things we like with sort of a darker lens. And there are swears, mostly from me. So, Nick, when you're not really loving the new dimensions of the Klingons, where can people find you?
You can find me. So I am in the Babel Conference quite regularly, and you can also find me on Twitter at Punkzoologist, where I often tweet about my work and my projects and also a whole range of other things. It's Twitter, and I just go with whatever I feel like. I'm also on Instagram at Punkrockzoologist, and there you will see photos of Warhammer and model kits that I've put together, or interesting insects that I've found, or just photos of views and nature and anything that I see, and most recently a whole lot of pictures from the conference that I attended. So, and Liam, when you're not drinking all of South Australia dry of its wine resources, where can people find you?
In hospital.
Which is where you should be if you were doing that.
So I'm, of course, in the Babel Conference. I'm also on Twitter at LS74656. And also, you can find me elsewhere on the network on To The Journey with Zachary Fruling and Suzanne Williamson.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That is patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we appreciate any support you can give us. We hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all of the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our associate producers, and they are Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mellett, Chris Trabuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Edge.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge... a Federation space. Oh, what do we actually talk about? I might just say Discovery as a whole.
Discovery's holes? That sounds dirty.
Normally, my mind would go there as well, but you said Discovery's holes, and I've just very innocently thought of the cutouts in the sources section.
I've just found the episode title.
Oh, no.
Better than Granddaddy Brandy, for sure. Oh, good times.
It's been fun talking about Discovery's holes.
Oh dear.
This is going at the end.